Good morning, everybody. An absolute pleasure to be here. This is a very special moment for me personally. Last time that I had the opportunity to speak at Midrashat Yom Rishon, little did I know that that afternoon I'd be getting engaged. and my chatan at the time surprised me, and so it's quite nice to have this full circle of being back here a year later, and having my husband be here as well, and Bershus, my parents, who are joining this morning as well. I've always had a personal just appreciation for Midrashat Yom Rishon. I find it extremely inspiring, women coming out on a Sunday morning and learning Torah, and so I really thank you for letting me be a part of your learning this morning, and I very much look forward to learning this topic with you. I don't know how many of you have had this experience, but Baruch Hashem, when I come back from an amazing trip at Israel, and you're on that line, which some of us might have the you know, very unique opportunity of having the global entry of just running through the border patrol, but many of us have to stay in line and wait. And as we're waiting through, you know, you kind of reminisce on the amazing trip you just had in Eretz Yisrael. And you're tired, it's been a long journey, and you get to the border patrol officer, and you give him your passport or her your passport, and they look at you, they ask you a few questions, they stamp it, and then they look at you and they say, "Welcome home." And in that moment, you just have like a little tinge. You know, you think to yourself, "Am I home? I just came from home. But I am home. I'm about to go home. I'm about to be reunited with my family, do my laundry, do the things that I know that are, you know, familiar to me. And so, yes, I am home." And yet, when they say that, they don't even know the theological struggle that they create inside of us. Am I home? Am I not home? And it's something that every time it happens to me, it never gets easier. It always just gets harder and harder. And when I tried to find chizuk in trying to deal with this type of experience, obviously I looked to the Torah, and I looked to the various different characters of Tanakh that I think also felt the same way. Perhaps not going through border patrol, but I believe that there are two particular figures in Tanakh that had the same struggle, where they were in one land, not in our homeland in Israel, and yet they made a home for themselves there, yet yearning for the return back to their home in Israel. So I'd like to this morning look at the story of Yosef and as Moshe as individuals, take snapshots from their lives, and to highlight where it is that we see that they are probably struggling with this concept, and ultimately at the end to see how these two characters actually come together in a really beautiful way that perhaps gives us the tools and the insights as to how to view our existence in our lives where we feel so at home in a foreign land, and yet we yearn to be home in our homeland. So looking at the story of Yosef, we all know Yosef has a very difficult beginning. He is the son of Rachel, who is beloved to Yaakov, and his brothers do not appreciate the extra attention being given to him. And we know that he is a dreamer, he's a visionary, he believes that he has this destiny that he has to fulfill. And ultimately the brothers are jealous of him, and they come to hate him. And we know that Yosef then is betrayed by his brothers, sold into slavery. And as we see him go through the slavery, he ends up in Egypt. And while he is in Egypt, he finds himself successful in all the little parts that he finds himself. First, in the house of Potiphar, he rises to great accomplishment just to be betrayed by Potiphar's wife and framed for something that he didn't do. He's then thrown in jail, and in jail he still finds success, and somehow they like him there and they build him up, and he finds that he can rise the ranks in the jail itself. And he then comes to meet this baker and butler who have dreams in which he interprets. And as the butler will return back to his services and the baker will be executed, he tells the butler, "Don't forget me. Remember me so that you can get me out of this place." And as we all know, the story continues that the butler did in fact forget him. And we're left to think what will be with Yosef. And yet we then see this dreams that Paro has, and Paro is troubled by them. And then the butler remembers, I have to remember my sins of today, but I met a man in the jail who can interpret your dream. And then Yosef comes out. And as Yosef comes to Paro and interprets the dreams and does what is favorable in Paro's eyes, Paro then gives Yosef one of the highest statuses of Egypt. He makes him second to him. He makes him second to the king. And he gives him a wife, and he gives him a new life and a new opportunity to recreate himself. And where I'd like to be looking at the first source with you is that as Yosef has gone through so much up until this point, he's gone through family betrayal, he's gone through professional betrayal, and he's had the highs and the lows in this land of Egypt. He now has a new chapter that he's looking at. He's looking at a chapter of his life where he is completely in control. He is successful. He has Paro's listening ear. He has prestige. He has a new wife. And now, thank God, his family starts to expand. And Yosef has two sons. And if you look at the first source on your sheet, it's very interesting to see what the psukim say. Uli Yosef yolad shnei banim b'terem tavo shnat harav, asher yaldalo asnat bat poti pera kohen on. And Yosef had two children, born to him by his wife Asnat, who was the daughter of a priest there, Potipera. Vayikra Yosef et shema bechor. And so he names his first son Menashe. Why? The Torah says, Ki nashani elokim et kol amali ve'et kol beit avi. Interesting. He names his son Menashe because Hashem has allowed him to forget all of his suffering and his father's household. So we might say to ourselves in this moment, this is interesting, looking at Yosef, that maybe Yosef actually at this moment says, I have a new chapter, I'm done. I don't have to remember anything of my past. I don't have to remember the life I had. I don't have to remember where I came from, not even my father's house. This son represents the newness of my life, the opportunity of this land of Egypt. I have an opportunity to grow here. People actually believe in me. People are not betraying me. And now this is where I'm going to start my life. And his first son holds that name, Menashe. However, his second son, V'eichim Hasheni, Kara Ephraim. He names his second son Ephraim. Why? Ki Hifrani Elokim Be'eretz Aniyai. Because Hashem has allowed me to be successful in the land of my affliction. So it's almost like a contradiction of names. His first son represents the ability to maybe move past his past and forget all that came before. And yet he names his second son Ephraim because he's so successful, but in the land of his affliction, in the land in which he doesn't feel fully at home. And so with this naming of his children, we see that perhaps Yosef himself is conflicted. Yosef feels that he's yearning maybe to return back home, to be reunited with his family. But yet at the same time, we might see that he might want to forget all of that and start over with a new chapter, with a new opportunity here in Egypt. And although we can go through the story of Yosef and dissect every little encounter that we see with Yosef, we'll find that Yosef doesn't, in fact, show one particular way of his view of where he finds himself in the land. So if you look at the conclusion of the story, where the brothers do come down to Mitzrayim because of the famine, and they are reunited, and now Yosef has an opportunity to reconcile the relationship in which he had with the brothers, and then he continues to ask about Yaakov, and finally he reveals himself, where then the family does come from Eretz Canaan back to Mitzrayim in order to survive the famine together. Then at that moment when the family has reconciled and has come together and has been reunited back in Egypt, there is something bothering Yosef still. Yosef says, although we are now, you know, back together and that we have this opportunity to, forgive one another and to move past what happened, he's still concerned, what is the status of his children and his life in Egypt? What exactly does Yaakov, his father, think about all of this? One might even ask that Yosef doesn't make any attempt to contact Yaakov during the time that he is in Egypt. Again, maybe allowing us to think, wait a second, maybe Yosef really wants nothing to do with his father's household and to go back to the past in which he came from. And so he might say, this is my new life, and this is, you know, my existence here in Egypt. And yeah, what we find is that in source number two, we're going to see that Yosef is quite nervous. How will Yaakov think about the life that he built for himself in Egypt? Will we think about the children that was born to him in Egypt? How does he view his children? Are they children of his? Are they just children of Yosef who were born in a foreign land? And so when Yaakov himself feels that he is coming to the end of his life, what he'd like to do is he'd like to bless his grandchildren. And so Yosef brings these children, and source number two says, Vayar Yisrael et b'nei Yosef yomer mi'ela. So Yisrael, Yaakov, sees the children of Yosef and says, who are these? Vayomer Yosef el aviv. He responds to his father and he says, B'nayhem asher natan li elukim bazeh. Right? These are the children that God gave me here in this land. Vayomer kachemna alai vivarchem. And so Yaakov reassures Yosef, I want to bless them. Just like I'm going to give a blessing to each of my children here, your children are my children and I want to give them a blessing as well. And as the psukim continue, we see that Yaakov's vision is not great due to his age. And he kisses them and he hugs them and he brings them close to him. And just skipping down to the end of these psukim here, Vayikach Yosef et Shnehem et Ephraim b'yimino b'smolo Yisrael, he puts Menashe, the oldest, he takes Ephraim, the youngest, and he puts him to the left of Yaakov. And then he takes Menashe, the oldest, and puts him to the right of Yaakov. And we all know the famous story where he crosses his hands, and Yaakov puts the right hand over Ephraim and the left hand over Menashe. And as he is extending his hands, he begins the blessing. And he blesses Yosef. Vayvarech et Yosef vayomer halakim asher hitalchu avotai lefanav Avraham v'Yitzchak elokim haro'e oti me'odi ad hayom hazeh. And then he continues to bless the children, Ephraim and Menashe, with the famous words, Hamalach hagoel oti mikol ra yivarech et hane'arim v'yikare behem shemi shem avosai Avraham Yitzchak v'yidgula rov bekarev ha'aretz. And he gives the blessing that the malach, the angel that protected Yaakov, also a figure in Tanakh who had to escape his homeland due to the fact that his brother wanted to kill him, and he never quite felt at home in the land that he ran away from, always yearning to come back, and once he was able to, he did return. He says, just like the malach in my lifetime when I was running from the land that I belonged to, should also bless these children as well, recognizing that these children were in fact born in Egypt, represented this new life for Yosef. And he says something very interesting. He says that they should be called in the names of our forefathers, right? Abraham and Yitzchak, clearly reminding them that although they are from this land of Egypt and not from his homeland, that they are to recall the names of their forefathers, Avraham and Yitzchak, to recall that they belong somewhere else, that they had a history, that they had forefathers who were promised by God to be a nation in a land known as Israel. And yet, he concludes the bracha with something very interesting. V'yidgula rov bekarev ha'aret. So not only should they be protected by the malach, and that they should be recall the names of their ancestors, but vayidgula rov bekarav haaret, right? They should be multiply and successful in the land. Now, that's a very general type of reading. I once saw a very interesting, specific type of reading, which is vayidgu, if you look at that word, seems to be a strange word to use. But the shorish of the word is dag, fish. And as we know, fish multiply by the masses. So perhaps what Yaakov is saying is that you should multiply and be successful like fish are, but larov bekarav haaretz, in your land. And yet it's an extremely unique choice of words. Why is Yaakov blessing his grandchildren to multiply and to be successful in the land like fish? We all know, we've all had probably goldfish or children or grandchildren who have had goldfish, that if you take it out of the water and they fall on the floor, they're going to die. They don't survive without water. They need the water to survive. So, vayidgu larov bekarav hayam, might have been a more appropriate thing. That they should multiply like fish in the land. So what's interesting is perhaps Yaakov realizes that although Ephraim and Manasseh were born in Egypt, in a land that isn't natural to them, just like land is not natural to fish, still you should be successful. And in essence, Yaakov is recognizing and sending a message to Yosef, I understand the conflict that your family is going through. You were born in my house back in Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael, and you were sold into slavery and you weren't given the opportunity to be raised in the house, and yet you still have that idea, that nostalgia of home, and yet you are in this land where these children were born to you. And this land of Egypt provided for you opportunity, it provided success, it provided all the things that allowed you to flourish. And so it's normal perhaps to have felt conflicted. And your children were born in this land, so they only know of this land, and yet I'm sure you've told them the stories of our family, and you've told them the stories of the promises that our forefathers, Abraham and Yitzchak, were given to return to another land. And yet this conflict could sometimes leave you paralyzed. So instead, what Yaakov does is he recognizes and he says, they should be blessed, v'yidgu larov bekarev ha'aretz. That no matter whether or not you're in your natural environment, you should still be successful. But at the same time, recall where it is that you did in fact come from and where it is that you should be going to. So I think that that's an interesting piece of Yosef's personal struggle, and that is then also being translated later on to his children as well. The third snapshot of Yosef's life, again, that we see this struggle come out in, is at the end of Yosef's life. That once Yaakov does indeed, in fact, pass away, and he is asked to go be buried in the land of his forefathers in Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael, they go, they bring him, and they bury him, and then they return. And life continues, and Yosef and his brothers live in Mitzrayim. But, as all things do, time moves forward, and the conclusion of Yosef's life is coming now to an end. And so source number 3 says, Vayishev Yosef in Mitzrayim, hu beit aviv, vayichi Yosef mea v'eser shanim. And so Yosef lived to the ripe old age of 110 years old, and he was able to rebuild himself once again back in Mitzrayim after the death of Yaakov. Vayar Yisrael Ephraim b'nei shilishim, gam b'nei machir ben Menashe yoldu al barkei Yosef. He was not only able to see his children grow and his grandchildren, but he's able to see 3 generations. And now he realizes that the end of his life is near. So vayomer Yosef el achav. So Yosef calls first his brothers. Anochi meit, I will die. Ve'elokim pakod yifkad etchem. But God will surely remember you. Va'ale etchem min ha'aretz. And will bring you up from this land. Sorry, min ha'aretz hazos. El ha'aretz asher nishba la'avram uli Yitzchak uli Yaakov. And he will surely return you back to the land that he has promised Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So at the deathbed of Yosef, even this conflict of where he belongs and where he yearns to be is still so apparent to us in the text. Yosef says, I'm going to die and I know I will die in this land, but for you, Hashem will remember you and he will bring us out of this land to the promised land that we have been given by our forefathers, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And then it says something interesting. Vayishba Yosef et Bnei Yisrael. Yosef makes Bnei Yisrael swear. Leimor pakod yifkod Elokim etchem vahalitem et atzmosai mizeh. That they will swear that when Hashem does in fact remember them and brings them out of this land of Egypt into the promised land, et atzmotai mizeh, you will also bring my bones with you so that they can be buried into the land of Israel and not stay here in Mitzrayim. Vayama Yosef ben Meah ve'esra shanim, Yosef dies at 110. Vayichantu oto v'yisim ba'aron b'Mitzrayim. That he is somewhat, I guess, either mummified or taken special care of, and he is placed in a coffin, and he is placed in Mitzrayim, with the promise, though, that they will bring his bones to the land of Egypt. Now, I know it's not on your source sheet, but and again, I don't work for the Sfarim Sale, but I'll just point it out. I know the Sfarim Sale is starting. Last year, I actually got this magnificent book called Vision and Leadership, written by Rav Yosef Soloveitchik, and it talks about the lives of Yosef and Moshe in vision and leadership. And in one of the chapters, he actually mentions the unique arrangement of these psukim. And he says, if you look very carefully, we just said that he called in his brothers at his deathbed, and he says, I'm going to die, and I'm letting you know that in the future Hashem will take us out of Mitzrayim. But look at Pasuk Chaf Hei very carefully. Rav Soloveitchik points out something fascinating. Who does he make swear that the bones will go up to Eretz Yisrael and not stay here in Mitzrayim? V'yishma Yosef et b'nei Yisrael. He could have said that he made his brother swear. He says, Vayomer Yosef el Achav in the Pasuk before. He could have made his brother swear that his bones would go up, but he makes it a national initiative. He says, as a nation, I don't know if it's going to be you, I don't know if it's going to be your children, but if I make Bnei Yisrael swear that they will bring my bones up to Am Yisrael, so then they will be able to fulfill the promise. And I'll just read the words of Rav Soloveitchik, because the book is called Vision and Leadership, Reflections on Joseph and Moses, by Rav Soloveitchik. And I'll just read you one paragraph that he says here, because obviously Rav Soloveitchik could say it in the best way possible. Right, he says, just as Jacob's burial in the Promised Land symbolized that the Jew is just a sojourner here in Egypt and belongs somewhere else, so the burial of Joseph's remains in Canaan will have the same symbolic significance, perhaps a greater significance. He did not ask a favor from his brothers, right? This wasn't a family favor, but he demanded it from the people as a community, as a nation. He wanted to be buried in Canaan like Jacob before him. He wanted to demonstrate the truth that no matter how high an office a Jew might hold in Egypt, no matter how famous and powerful and prominent the Jew is in the general society, his spiritual identity does not change. He belongs to the covenantal community, and of course, he is steadfast as a son of the covenant, did not conflict with the politically loyal to the state that he served. But on the other hand, the state itself cannot demand from him to give up his Jewish identity. We believe that we can commit ourselves at a political level to the state or the society in which we live in, and to the people among whom we live. We can commit ourselves to the discharge our duty in the most perfect manner while not sacrificing our Jewish identity. Joseph has shown that. But at the same time that he was very loyal and steadfast as a citizen, his devotion as a citizen did not conflict with the determination to retain his Jewish identity. And I think that as we could look, and again, I know this is just quick sound bites of Yosef's life, and we could really spend a lot of time here really delving into the life of Yosef. But I think we could see that Yosef perhaps was indeed that conflicted character of knowing how successful he was able to achieve in a foreign land, how much he appreciated this foreign land for that opportunity, and yet his Jewish identity, his soul called and yearned for his homeland, and making Bnei Yisrael promise to bring up his bones, not just his brothers, was a way of kind of getting the nation ready to recognize that as long as they were going to stay in Egypt, the promise would fulfill itself, and that they would be able to bring his bones, ultimately fulfilling his hope and dream of returning to his homeland. Moving on to source number 4, this is something a little bit later on in Tanakh, in Sefer Bamidbar, just to show a little bit of how far spiritual genes could ultimately go. We know that Yosef's great-great-granddaughters had a very special request of Moshe. And as Bnei Yisrael have left Mitzrayim, and we'll see shortly, his promise was fulfilled, in that his bones were being taken with Am Yisrael through that journey, hopefully into the land of Israel. As Israel stays in the desert, ready to enter the land, and they're being told of how now the land is going to be divvied up amongst the various different Shvatim, there is a family that is blessed with daughters and has no brother. Their father has passed away. And so they're curious now what will happen to them as they go into the land. Will they get an inheritance or not? And so this is the story in Bamidbar, Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, V'tikrovna benot Slavchad. We are introduced to the daughters of Slavchad, Ben Chifer, Ben Gilad, Ben Machir, Ben Menashe, L'mishpachot Menashe, Ben Yosef, V'ele Shemos benosav, Machla Noah, Chagla, Milka, V'tirtza. Now, we're introduced to the daughters of Slavchad, but we're given their whole family lineage. We say Slavchad was the son of Chefer, who was the son of Gilad, who was the son of Machir, who was from Menashe, who was from the family of Yosef. And what were the daughters' names, since we're talking about the daughters? Machla, Noah, Chagla, Milka, Vitirza. We could have made this pasuk much shorter and says, Vitikrovna benot Slavchad, the daughters of Slavchad came before Moshe. What were their names? Machla, Noah, Chagla, Milka, Vitirza. Why do we have to go through the whole background as to where they come from? That Slavchad was the son of Chefer, who was the son of Gilad, who was the son of Menashe, who was the son of Yosef. And so Rashi's bothered by this, and he asks that very question. Why go through the whole family history to let us know where they come from? Just introduce us to them. We know they make the request of Moshe. We don't have a father. He died of his own sins. We don't have a brother. We don't have any male relative that can inherit the land. We want to inherit the land. Can women inherit the land when we go in? And we know the story that Moshe does, in fact, have to ask Hashem, and Hashem says yes, and they are granted this unique and amazing opportunity. So Rashi says, but why the whole family lineage? Why are you giving me so much information, tracing it all the way back to Yosef? So Rashi says something fascinating, and it's on your sources here. Rashi, Bamidr Chav Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, L'mishpacho Menashe ben Yosef, so lama ne'emar halo kvar ne'emar be'menashe. Perhaps what Rashi is suggesting is that it has to go all the way back, and it wants to mention Yosef. Why? Because it wants to show that their great grandfather Yosef had a belovedness of the land. He was completely consumed with love for the land of Israel, and that just doesn't go away once he passed away. Through spiritual genes or through the education of his children to the next generation, to the next generation, to the next generation, they were infused with this love of Israel, they were infused with this love of Eretz Yisrael. As we know, the pasuk says, we read it before, Ha'alitem et atzmotai, please bring my bones up from the land of Egypt to be buried into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And as it says, Ubnosav chavavu et ha'aret sheneemar tzna lanu achuza. We see that land, we see that love manifest itself in the daughters of Slavchad by coming over to Moshe and asking them, or asking of him, please give us the opportunity to inherit the land, give us the opportunity to live in this land. So we see that it doesn't just stop with Yosef at his death bed, this love for the land and this recognition of wanting to be in Eretz Yisrael, but it continues on even in his granddaughters who were, you know, raised in the desert and ultimately now being given the opportunity to go into the land and to inherit it. And so we see that love is something that is transferred from generation to generation. At this point, we'll conclude with our brief study of Yosef. And to compare a bit with another character of Tanakh that really has a very similar story and has a very similar conflict. And that is the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. And what is fascinating is if we look at these two characters, they have a lot in common. We know that Yosef was sold down to Mitzrayim, and we know that Moshe was born in Mitzrayim. We know that Yosef got raised to the high royal family of Paro and was second to him. And we know that Moshe grew up in the royal palace. We know that Yosef was given a wife, Osnat, who was the daughter of a priest of Egypt. And we see that as well. Moshe, when he gets married, he marries the daughter of a priest, Yitro, known as Sipora. And we know that Moshe himself also yearned for the entry of the land of Israel. And yet it was something that was denied to him in his lifetime. And so what we see an interesting comparison of these two characters, looking at Moshe's life, where does Moshe struggle as well with this concept? So as we know, Moshe is born into a Jewish family, and he is raised, though, in the palace. So his identity, perhaps, is a bit confused. Does he belong to his family's house, back with Amram and Yocheved, or does he belong with his adopted family, with Bat Paro in the royal household? And we don't really get to see much of Moshe's emotional or his identity, other than when we look at Perek Bet in Shemot, Sukkim Yud Aleph through Yud Dalet. And it says the following, Vayihi bayimim ahem, vayidal Moshe, vayitzei al achiv, vayar b'tzavlotam, vayar ish mitzri, makeh ish ivri me'achav. And if we look at this pasuk, which says that when Moshe grew up, he went out to his brothers, and he saw their suffering, and he saw an Egyptian man hit a man of the Ivrim from his brothers, the pasuk is a little bit ambiguous. If I had to ask you, Vayigdal Moshe v'yitzei el achav, that Moshe grew up and he went to go see his brothers, which brothers is he talking about? Did Moshe grow up and say, I want to go out to my Egyptian brethren and see what they're doing and see how they're building the pyramids? And then he happened to have seen that these people, the Ivrim, the Hebrews, were the ones building and being tortured, and that's... Or is he going out to the people that he believes is his brothers, which is that he identifies himself with his biological family, that he wants to see what's happening to his brothers who are being enslaved, and that the pasuk is almost left ambiguous. We're not really sure. Does Moshe feel this alliance to the Egyptians, or does he feel the alliance to the Ivrim? And as we continue to read the psukim, it says that he sees that there is an injustice, and he sees that this Mitzri hits the Ish Ivri. Vayifen ko v'ko, he looks here and there. Vayar ki ein ish, he sees that there is no man. Vayach et ha-mitzri v'tmineh v'chol, he kills him and he buries him in the sand. And as he goes out the next day, vayitze b'yom ha-sheni, hinei shnei anashim ivrim, that he sees these two Hebrew men, nitzim v'yomar l'rasha lama takeh l'reyacha, and they're fighting with each other, and he intervenes Moshe, and he says, why are you fighting with each other? Vayomer mi samcha l'ish sar v'shofet alinu, and they give him a lot of sass, right? They say, who are you? Did we ask you to be our judge? Did we ask you to come and judge us and to be involved in our affairs? And at that moment, Moshe realizes something, which I think is very interesting. He says to himself at the end, Vayira Moshe is great. He has this great fear. Vayomer acheinu dahadavar. The thing is now known. But now again, the ambiguity of that realization, what is now known? The fact that these two men didn't appreciate his involvement in their fight, and they even say, what are you going to do, kill us like you killed the Mitzri? So we oftentimes say that he was scared that the fact that he had killed the Mitzri is going to get him in trouble with Paro, and that he was going to get killed for doing something like that. But perhaps, this was interesting, I heard this from Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, that he says that maybe what Moshe realizes and what gave him great fear is that Acheinu Dahadavar, now the matter is known to Moshe, that he doesn't really belong. That even though he was trying to stand up for the people of Am Yisrael, for the Ivrim, and trying to say, don't fight with one another, right? You have to support one another. And they said, who made you king over us, right? Who made you the shofet over us? He realized, wait a second, they don't really look at me and say, oh, you belong, or that you're part of who we are, or that you really are one of us. And so, Acheinu Dahadavar, it almost came to a clarity moment for Moshe, and he says, wait a second, I don't really feel like I belong in the palace, and I don't feel like I really belong amongst the Ivrim, so where do I really belong? I belong nowhere. And so what's the psukim that happened right after this? He runs away and he finds himself in Midian, and that's when he ultimately finds his future father-in-law Yitro and his wife Zipporah, and he makes for himself a new life in a new land there. And so Moshe himself is conflicted with his identity. Where does he belong? Is he Egyptian? Is he Jewish? Or does he in fact belong to maybe a third party, which is this new land in which he runs away to. So in the next source, as he comes to meet Zipporah, he meets her at the well, and there was some trouble there, and he helped them get water to their flocks. So they come home early, and Yitro, their father, says, "V'tavno et Reuel avihen, v'yomer madua mahartem bo hayom." Why have you returned so quickly today, says Yitro to his daughters. Why have you been able to do your work so fast? V'tomarna, they say to their father, well, an ish mitzri hitzilanu miad haroim. A Egyptian man was able to help us from the shepherds. V'gam dalo dala lo v'yashka tatzon. And he even helped get water for us and water for the sheep as well. And what's interesting in this source is that we see that the way that Moshe is perceived by the daughters of Yitro, and the way that he presents himself at least, is that he is an Ish Mitzri, that he is Egyptian, whether he was wearing the clothes of an Egyptian man or he spoke Egyptian, but he was identified as an Ish Mitzri. So again, Moshe's identity here, again, seems to be somewhat aligned with Egypt, and he seems to be something that is important to him, but at the same time, he's running away from all of that, and so again, we see the tension and the conflict between these two, heritages. Now, if we move on, what's interesting is that it is, in fact, that Moshe gets a wife from Yitro, his daughter Sipora, which is the next source. Vayoal Moshe leshevet et ish vayitena Sipora bito leMoshe, and the daughter of Sipora, I'm sorry, the daughter of Yitro, Sipora, was given to Moshe as a wife, and they have children. Vitelet ben, and he has a son, and just like we saw with Yosef, Yosef's conflict of his own feelings came out in the naming of his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. So too, we see that with his firstborn son, he also names his son something quite interesting. Vayikra shemo Gershom, ki amar ger ha'iti be'eretz Nachria. That this child was born to me in a land that is a foreign land, where I also don't feel at home. And so Gershom, Gersham, he very much shows that he doesn't necessarily feel that now there's a homecoming with Yitro. Not necessarily clear that maybe he's talking about this land, maybe he's talking about Egypt, maybe he's talking about another land, but we see that there is a conflict here. Where does he belong? Where does he find himself at home? And as we see Moshe develop throughout the Midbar and throughout his life, we see that his mission is then given to him by God. A few moments later, or a few psukim later, we should say, he is taken by God at the Sna, and he's told that he's charged with the mission of leaving Am Yisrael, of going back to Egypt, back to where he was from, and to taking out the people from Egypt to the promised land of Eretz Yisrael. And we see that maybe Moshe gets on this mission with the idea that he will finally find a home. He will finally find the place where he belongs. He's able to go back to that place that he came from, leave it with Am Yisrael, and move towards his hopeful future of coming into the land of Israel. And in this last snapshot here of Moshe's life, which is, again, just a quick snapshot because there's really so much to develop throughout, obviously, all of Chumshei Torah. But it's the last scene that we see Moshe Rabbeinu, just like the last scene that we saw with Yosef at his deathbed. This is Moshe's last scene right before he dies. Now, Moshe, a dedicated servant, someone who loves Hashem, someone who loves the people, someone who dedicated his whole life to teaching the people, who gave us the Torah, who dealt with all the complaints and with all the various different ups and downs of the Midbar, and whose hope was to enter the land with the people and to fulfill the mission in which he was charged back by Hashem. He is coming to the end of his life, and he has been told already multiple times he is not to enter the land and that he is not going to go in with the people themselves. And really, in heart-wrenching psukim in Dvarim, it says, Vayal Moshe me'aravot Moav el har Navo. Moshe ascends the mountain which God told him to go. Rosh ha-piskah asher al pnei Yericho. Vayarehu Hashem et kol ha'aretz. God shows him the entire land, the promised land, the land in which he might have felt most at home, and yet he'd never actually stepped foot in. And yet it says, skipping down to Pasuk Dalet, Vayomer Hashem alav zos ha'aretz. This is the land. This is the land you've yearned for. This is the land in which Asher Nishbati, I swore to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Lemor, Lizaracha, and Nena, to your children, I will give this land. Hariticha beinecha v'shama lo ta'avor. You could see it with your eyes, but you can't go in. Which every time we read it in Shul, it doesn't get any easier. It's almost this extremely difficult passage of recognizing how much Moshe sacrificed and gave for Am Yisrael to go into Eretz Yisrael, and yet he himself is not able to walk in that land. Vayamat Sham Moshe, and in that place Moshe dies. He was an Eved Hashem be'Eretz Moav al pi Hashem. And although Moshe yearns to go into the land and he wants to go into the promised land of our forefathers, in the land of Moab is where he dies and where he ultimately has his final resting place, and he dies al pi Hashem, with a kiss of God. And we know that Moshe is buried there. So we have these two figures. We have Moshe and Yosef, who clearly have conflicted perhaps identities or perhaps alliances as to where it is that they feel most at home. They're successful mostly outside the lands of Israel, and yet they yet want to return to the land. I think that there is a point in Tanakh, which we find in our Parsha this week, in Parshas B'Shalach, that ultimately unite these two figures, and that give us a tremendous sense of perhaps what it means to go into the land of Israel with the Geula. So we have that last week in Parshat Bo. We read that Am Yisrael were told that they had to get the Korban Pesach ready, and it required a lot of work, as we can all imagine, as we get ready for Pesach every year ourselves, how much work that requires. And here as well, they had to get the Korban ready and prepare and make sure that everything was done accordingly. And while everyone was running as the smell of freedom was in the air, Moshe himself was busy with something else. He was not busy necessarily making a Korban Pesach, but the Midrash tells us he goes out to find the bones of Yosef, as the promise that Yosef made Am Yisrael promised that his bones would be taken out. As they're about to leave the land of Egypt, he has to make sure that the bones are ready to be taken out when they are given the green light to go. And so what's interesting is that this most likely takes place in Parsha Bo. And yet the Psukim don't mention that Moshe takes out the bones until our Parsha this week, Parshas B'Shalach, Perek Yud Gimel. That's when we're told that Moshe takes the bones of Yosef as they leave Mitzrayim, once Paro had already kicked them out from last week, and we're approaching the Yam, we're approaching the sea that we ultimately know will split and that will, seal the deal in our Geula. So the pasuk says, "V'kach Moshe et atmos Yosef imo ki hishbia et bnei Yisrael leimor pakod yifkod elokim etchem v'alitem et atmotai mizeh etchem." So a beautiful article written by Rav Avraham Gordimor from YU here. You could see it. I gave the source here at yutorah.org, Parsha Speshalach. He asks that question, why is it that it appears in this Parsha and not last week's Parsha? And perhaps because this week's Parsha, Parsha Speshalach, is all about the Geula, specifically the Pasuk was written here, although historically might have happened in Parshat Bo, to show us that the first steps of Geula are the fact that we have to recognize the fulfillment of the Brit that Hashem gave the Avos, and the fulfillment of the Brit that He gives all future generations. And so in his words, Rav Gordimor's words, he says, Moshe is taking Yosef's bones forth from Mitzrayim, fortified the Emunah, the faith, the sense of security of Bnei Yisrael, enabling this fragile nation to depart Mitzrayim and to enter the desert with cognizance of Brit Avot. So had it been mentioned historically, accurately, where it happened in Parshat Bo, this gives us a more of a Emunah, faith-driven perspective. As we're about to go through the Geula, as we're about to go through the Yam, it tells us that Moshe was carrying these bones because what these bones represented was the fact that a fragile nation who had been through so much never gave up hope because they had the cognizance of recognizing that Hashem would fulfill Brit Avot. By commanding that his remains accompany Bnei Israel upon their departure from Mitzrayim, Yosef continued to protect and inspire his people for countless years after his passing. It was almost with this promise that he had made Bnei Israel swear from generation to generation to generation, and that was told from one household to the next household to the next household. When we get out of Mitzrayim, when Hashem takes us out of here, remember to take the bones of Yosef. It had been given this tremendous amount of hope and yearning that the people would in fact get out, and when they did, they'd have to commit themselves to their forefather Yosef by removing his bones from the land and bringing it to their land, the land of Eretz Yisrael. So it connected them always to Hashem's unbroken promise to the Avos. And you can almost imagine with the back-breaking labor that the Egyptians must have given Am Yisrael, and with their completely demoralized outlook, can you imagine sitting around the table, just sitting with your family, and they said, although we know that it doesn't seem possible in our time, but we know from our great-great-grandfather, from Zadie Yosef, that his bones are our promise to him is that we're taking out his bones when we get out. And although we could say, well, that's never going to happen, it was almost this promise, it was almost this idea that kept them going. It always had that connection for the people. The bones had the connection that Hashem would, in fact, fulfill his promise and that it would not be unbroken by God. So I think that this is a really unique situation in which Moshe recognizes this, and he wants to bring these bones with him, so that he could show Bnei Israel that the Geula is taking place, and that this is all part of Brit Avot. What's also interesting, and I'll just make a side note here, is that Moshe comes from Shevet Levi, and what we might have assumed might have been the reality is that who would have been the one to be, searching for Yosef's bone of the night of the Seder, the night that they knew they were going to go out for the Geula. Perhaps it would have been Menashe, perhaps it would have been Ephraim, it would have been Yosef's own children. And yet, we see that it was a great-great-great-grandson of Levi, who ultimately is the one looking for Yosef's bones and saying, I'm going to fulfill the promise to a brother. I'm going to fulfill the promise to our uncle Yosef, because it's not just about the fact that they represented the Emunah of Hashem fulfilling his Brit Avot, but he went one step further by Moshe being the one to do it, which was that a person from another Shevet was going to find that this was their responsibility and that this was extremely important. And what better message for us to recognize in the time of the Geula? That if we want the Geula to happen, it can't just be, well, it's in my family, it's in my tradition that I'm going to fulfill the Mesorah, I'm going to fulfill what's necessary, but that all Am Yisrael, Arevim Zebazeh, we concentrate on one another and we sacrifice for one another, regardless of a family connection. Ultimately, we have a larger family connection of being part of Am Yisrael. And I think to myself, how did we get into Mitzrayim in the first place? It was because the brothers such as Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zebulun, they couldn't stand Yosef. They couldn't stand what he represented. They couldn't stand that his mother was the beloved one, while their mother perhaps was not as beloved in the eyes of Yaakov. And yet generations later, they were able to repair that relationship. They were able to repair hatred with the fact that when we're talking about Moshe, the great-great-great-great-grandchild of Levi, all of a sudden is looking for the bones of Yosef and saying, I won't abandon you again, Yosef. You made us promise, and I'm going to stick to that promise. Perhaps it's most appropriately placed now in Parshas Beshach, because those are the keys to the Geula, that it stands not only to show us the fortified emunah Am Yisrael had of the fact that Hashem would fulfill Brit Avot, but as well as Am Yisrael coming together in Achdus, a Levi taking out the bones of someone from Shevet Yosef, or Ephraim and Menashe were not the ones, but it was a descendant of Levi himself. Two more sources that I just want to point out, which I think are quite fascinating. This next source in Devarim Rabbah, I say with caution that it is extremely sharp, but I think it also makes a particular point that is worth mentioning. We just mentioned that, Moshe went out of his way to go find the bones of Yosef, and he was able to fulfill the promise, and ultimately Yosef's bones are indeed buried in Eretz Yisrael because of Moshe. So one wants to hope that the happily ever story will end, that because of that dedication, somehow Moshe gets his, ability to get back to the land of Israel himself, and yet we know that that's not the case. So this midrash is quite sharp, but it, again, gives us food for thought, or perhaps makes us think. It says like this, Amar Rabbi Levi, Amar Lefanav, Ribono Shel Olam. Moshe goes before HaKadosh Baruch and he says, Atzam Asmosav Shel Yosef Nechnesu La'aretz. The bones of Yosef got to go into the land. V'ani Eini Nechnas La'aretz, but I can't go into the land. Right, why did the bones of Yosef get to go in, but I can't go in at all? Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mi Shehoda Ba'artzo, Nikbar Ba'artzo. Hashem has quite a sharp response for Moshe, and he says, he who associates himself or who identifies himself with the land, he will be buried in that land. Umi shaloho da barto, but one who doesn't associate or necessarily find his identity in the land, enu nikbar barto, and he won't be buried there. Yosef ho da barto, how do we know that Yosef associated himself with the land of Eretz Yisrael? So what does it say? When he was in the house of Isha Potiphar, Gavrito Omeret, so when she frames him, she says, Ra'u havilanu ish ivri. Look, you brought upon this Hebrew slave, and look what he did to me. Look, he tried to defile me, he mocked us here, but he was described as an ish ivri. And then later on, we see even A second example, when it says "Ganov guvnafti me'aretz ha'ivrim nikbar be'artz," "Ganafti me'aretz ha'ivrim," that I was stolen from my land of the Ivrim. When Yosef is talking to Paro, he identifies himself as "my land was the land of the Ivrim." So what happens because of that? Nikbar be'artzo, Yosef gets to be buried in his land. But with Moshe, what happens? Moshe, what does it say? We read the psukim earlier, just skipping down to the bottom, also for the sake of time. Ish mitzri hitzilanu miyad haro'im. When Moshe is being referred to by Tzipora to her father, she says, an ish mitzri was the one who saved us. V'hu shomeya v'shotek. Moshe overheard the conversation, and he didn't say anything. He didn't correct her. He didn't say, oh, I'm not really Egyptian. It's a long story. I might look Egyptian, but I am. He heard it and he accepted. He wasn't quite sure exactly where he belonged. Lefichach, lo nikbar ba'arto. He was not buried into his land. And so again, I say this midrash recognizing that it's sharp, but it does make you think, how do we identify ourselves? Do we identify ourselves in the land that we live in or in the land that we hope to return to, the land in which we hope to go to for our destiny, for our future? And yet when we see with these two characters, we see that perhaps Yosef had that ongoing identity, always belonging to another land, while perhaps Moshe even faltered for just one moment in thinking he didn't really know where he was, whether he was a Mitzri, whether he was an Ivri, and at that moment Hashem decreed, so one who doesn't associate himself fully with that land won't be buried there. Again, I know it's a sharp midrash, but definitely something to think about. And lastly, just one piece from Kol Dodi Dofeik. We won't do the whole thing, but I do find this to be very remarkable. When talking about religious Zionism in general, one can't help but mention Kol Dodi Dofeik, a beautiful essay written by Rav Soloveitchik. And he writes, our historic obligation today is to raise ourselves from a people to a holy nation, from the covenant of Egypt to the covenant of Sinai. And if I may just take some creative license here, I think that perhaps we could see the covenant of Egypt of the covenant of Sinai both in Yosef and in Moshe. The covenant of Egypt obviously representing Yosef, he was the reason we got down to Mitzrayim. He represented the Avos in a way that Hashem had promised us that we would be going down to Mitzrayim, but ultimately coming out. And the covenant of Sinai is obviously the Torah in which we received from Moshe Rabbeinu. And ultimately, we need the two to come together in order for us to be able to live the compelled existence. So from compelled existence to an original way of life, permeated with morality and religious principles. We need to know where we came from and who we ultimately descended from, but ultimately to know where we are going, which is the guide in which the Torah gives us, and that transcends history. We must go from being an encampment to being a nation. Can't just be the family of Yosef that went down to Mitzrayim, but we have to be the nation that Moshe took out of Mitzrayim, ultimately. And so the task of religious Zionism is to fuse the two covenants together. The covenant of Egypt and the covenant of Sinai, and the covenant of fate and destiny, of isolation and of loneliness, this task entails self-perfection by suffering and the outpouring of loving kindness brought about by combining all the elements of the nation and uniting them in one community. And I think that the mere fact that Yosef's bones were brought out by Moshe Rabbeinu is that exact idea, the covenants coming together, Brit Avot, Brit Har Sinai, the idea of what Yosef represented, what Moshe represented, and ultimately coming together to be buried in the land of Israel, and ultimately giving us the hope and the, you know, the dream of ultimately unifying these two together. I'll just conclude just with one story I heard that I think just ultimately sums up, you know, what we talk about when we say that, you know, we're spread out throughout the four corners of the land here in the world, and we can all very much self-identify with the land in which we live in, but ultimately yearn for the land in which we hope to go to. I heard this story from Natan Sharansky, and it really was one of the most powerful stories. I think about it all the time. He mentioned that once he had already been freed from the former Soviet Union and he had been living in Israel for quite some time, the Israeli government made a push to do a particular mission that many of us are familiar with, to go into Ethiopia, Mission Solomon, to bring in the Ethiopians who wanted to return back home to Israel. And somehow Natan Sharansky worked out that he could get onto the flight. Indeed, he was Natan Sharansky, and he wanted to be present there. He represented the Russian Jewry who had always yearned to come back home, and he wanted to be there as the Ethiopian Jewry wanted to return back home. And he had to work out a whole bunch of various different situations, but he was able to get onto that flight that flew to Ethiopia to bring the people to Israel. And he recalls that there was this nervousness on the flight. And although they were extremely prepared to do whatever was necessary in order to bring people back, they said, you know, does anybody actually speak Ethiopian here on the flight? And no one answered. And everyone said, not really well, or maybe a few words here and there. And they were all wondering how it was that they were going to be able to bring the people and what the interaction was going to be when the plane landed. And Natan Sharansky describes the following scene. He says the plane landed, and again, everyone doesn't really know exactly what's going on, and as the door is opening and lowering, he sees a sea of Ethiopian Jews just staring with hope in their eyes as they stare at a flight that came from Israel, about to allow them to board to come back home to the land of Israel. And they're staring at them. They're waiting for instructions. They're waiting for, you know, what to do next. And the Israelis who came on the mission are looking at them, and they start speaking to them in either broken Ethiopian and broken Hebrew, and there seems to be this very big lack of communication between the two sides. And all of a sudden, one of the Israelis, he just hushes the crowd, and he screams out, and he goes, "Yerushalayim!" And everyone in the crowd just started jumping up and down. Yerushalayim! 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 They just broke out into this big dance. The unifying word was Yerushalayim. And they didn't need anything else other than that. Somehow they got the people on the plane, and they flew back to the lands of Israel. And when I think about that story, I think, you know, we all come, you know, Baruch Hashem, with our own personal stories, coming from various different places of the world, and we might feel a great alliance and a great hakaras hatov to those places, and yet each and every one of us in our heart and soul yearns for the return back to the land of Israel, to the city of Yerushalayim, and just like Yosef and Moshe had their struggles and their stories, even in modern day today, we see the same love and affection for the land of Israel throughout the world. And maybe be Zocha, maybe next year, Midrash Yom Rishon will be emanating from Yerushalayim, and we should return to our homeland with tremendous excitement and unity for Am Yisrael. Thank you.